take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome back for a new live show. We've been away for a week, but it was a very, very productive week, let me tell you. We just had what we are calling Maria 2014. Maria stands for the Marijuana Activist Retreat in Astoria. And joining us for our retreat, we had Sean and Andra from DFW Normal, Dallas-Fort Worth, making it up to Astoria, Oregon. And we had Timmy, a.k.a. Big Daddy Fink, and his girlfriend out as well for a well-deserved rest and relaxation on the North Oregon coast. We had so much fun. Andra, of course, is a huge fan, and who isn't? A huge fan of The Goonies. That's right, the movie from 1985, The Goonies, featuring one of the Coreys, and of course, Sean Astin as a young boy. And we did all the typical touristy things, man. We went up to the Goonies' house and took the photo, and we did a beachcombing and had a fire, and, you know, went up to the Astoria Column and saw the wreck of the Peter Iredale, all that sort of fun stuff. Big thanks, of course, to Cannabis Carrie for hosting us all up there at her beautiful Kensington estate up there in Astoria, Oregon. We'll tell you all about it as the rest of the week rolls along. We'll also have some photos to unpack for you, so you can take a look at some of the North Coast beauty. Oh, and of course, much marijuana was consumed over the weekend. And I tell you, our friends from Texas and Georgia really love the Oregon green. All right, on today's show, we have so much to get to. First, we'll start off with our 420 radio headline news, where we've got news from Fife, Washington on that lawsuit against I-502. Santa Fe is moving ahead with DCRIM. We got a couple of studies to tell you about marijuana, domestic violence, and opiate overdose. We got a poll from the NFL on marijuana versus alcohol, and High Times fighting to end the advertising restrictions, or at least soften the advertising restrictions on marijuana businesses in the state of Colorado. We'll tell you all about that in our news. Then in Behind the Headlines, we'll go behind the headlines on that marijuana lowering the risk of domestic violence study. And in Cannabis Community Chat today, we can talk a little bit about that opiate overdose. Actually, we'll do that in Drug War Data Mining on the opiate overdose data. Then, when we get to half past, we are going to do an extended radical rant. We are going to dig in to the desperate lies of anti-pot district attorney Josh Marquis. I was just up there. I was literally about a block away from the guy's house. He is the leading voice that has arisen for law enforcement's opposition to Measure 91 here in the state of Oregon that would legalize marijuana for adults. And we will tell you some of the stuff we picked up off of his Facebook feed and off of his public statements that show you just how reefer mad the opposition to legalization here is in Oregon, and how desperate they're getting when the polls and the people pretty much think legalization is inevitable up here in the Pacific Northwest. Also, we will take it into hour two. Toker Talk Radio will take your calls at 971-533-7111. We'll tell you a little bit about this last weekend up in Astoria as well. Plus, we've got a copy of Kevin Sabet's book, Reefer Sanity, The 7 Great Myths of Marijuana, with lots of little post-it flags. Jennifer Alexander has been digging deep into that. We'll take a look about that if we get the time and we have enough anti-emetic handy. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. Check out my quotes in The Oregonian in their Oregon marijuana coverage, getting a lot of good coverage from The Oregonian on my opinions on the various things going on. You'll learn more about that in the Radical Rant as well. But stay tuned, because the news is next. Welcome back, everybody.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the High Times Cannabis Cups.
Join us for the International Cannabis Business Conference September 13th and 14th in the Portland Ballroom at the Oregon Convention Center. The International Cannabis Business Conference will focus on the emerging cannabis industry in Oregon, the United States, and around the world, putting you in front of the industry's foremost entrepreneurs, political leaders, and attorneys. Also showcasing over 40 cannabis-related industry exhibitors, offering VIP lunches and free nightly networking events. Prepare yourself for America's next great industry.
Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation, America's number one daily call-in show for the cannabis community. Every weekday at 4 and 7 Pacific on...
Hi, I'm Richard Harris. I'm the former director of addictions and mental health for the state of Oregon. Drug treatment and prevention are woefully underfunded right now. Measure 91 will better fund drug treatment and prevention programs. Marijuana isn't going anywhere. We're not stopping it with the war on drugs. You have to remember that marijuana is a pretty benign drug. It doesn't have the usual dependency features of, say, heroin or alcohol abuse. Now, marijuana feeds drug cartels and fuels violence. We can crack down on that. Take the money from drug cartels and, by the law, spend it on law enforcement, treatment, and education. Criminalizing marijuana is just no way to solve the problem. That's why treatment people like me are supporting Measure 91.
It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014. Can Washington cities ban pot businesses? A judge in Fife, Washington says yes. This from The Cannabist. A state judge said Friday that a small city can continue to ban state-licensed marijuana businesses in a case with big implications for Washington's experiment in legal pot. Pierce County Superior Court Judge Ronald Culpepper issued the ruling after extensive arguments over whether Initiative 502, the voter-approved state law that legalizes adult recreational use of marijuana, left any room for such local bans. The case concerned a ban in the Tacoma suburb of Fife. Would-be pot proprietor Ted Weatherby sued, saying he was entitled to do business, but the city wasn't letting him. Culpepper disagreed. Quote, Fife's ordinance is not preempted by I-502 or other state law, end quote, he said in an oral ruling. Weatherby said he would eventually appeal. Santa Fe City Council votes to decriminalize marijuana from HighTimes.com. The Santa Fe City Council has voted to decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana. City officials said in a news release that the council voted 5-4 last Wednesday night to approve the pot ordinance. The measure makes possession of an ounce or less of marijuana a civil infraction punishable by a fine of no more than $25. It had been a criminal misdemeanor. Activists had submitted enough valid voter signatures to force a public vote on the matter. The Santa Fe New Mexican reported that with approval, the council hoped to avoid the costs of a vote and the uncertainty of the question even making the November ballot. The newspaper says the vote makes Santa Fe the first city in the state to decriminalize pot. Marijuana lowers risk of domestic violence from HighTimes.com. The use of alcohol significantly increases one's likelihood of becoming either a perpetrator of or a victim of a violent act, including acts of intimate partner violence. As for cannabis use, that's a different story. In fact, according to a just published study in the journal Psychology and Addictive Behaviors, couples who use pot are particularly unlikely to engage in intimate partner violence. Investigators concluded, quote, these findings suggest there may be an overall inverse association between marijuana use and intimate partner violence perpetration in newly married couples, end quote. Legal marijuana states possess lower rates of opiate overdoses, from HighTimes.com. The enactment of medical marijuana laws are associated with significantly lower state-level opioid overdose mortality rates, according to data published online by the Journal of the American Medical Association. A team of investigators from University of Pennsylvania, Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York City, and the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore conducted a time series analysis of medical cannabis laws and state-level death certificate data in the United States from 1999 to 2010, a period during which 13 states instituted laws allowing for cannabis therapy. Researchers reported, quote, states with medical cannabis laws had a 24.8% lower mean annual opioid overdose mortality rate compared with states without medical cannabis laws, end quote. NFL Nation Confidential: players agree with President Obama, pot is not as dangerous as alcohol, from ESPN. As part of a survey of 100-plus players conducted by ESPN.com's NFL Nation, 75% of the 82 players who answered said they agree with Obama's statement, which he made during an interview in January with The New Yorker. The NFL's discipline policy on marijuana has come under fire this year after Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice received only a 2-game suspension after being arrested for domestic violence. High Times challenges Colorado's restrictions on pot-related speech, from Reason.com. High Times is seeking to overturn Colorado's onerous restrictions on marijuana advertising, which ostensibly are aimed at protecting impressionable children, but probably have more to do with protecting disapproving adults. The Marijuana Enforcement Division has prohibited advertising that is visible to members of the public from any street, sidewalk, park, or other public place. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014. 420 Radio, turning red states and blue states green. The International Cannabis Business Conference takes place September 13th and 14th at the Portland Ballroom in the Oregon Convention Center in Portland, Oregon. Featured speakers include Oregon Senator Floyd Prezansky, U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer, Daily Dish blogger Andrew Sullivan, author Doug Fine, and Harborside CEO Steve D'Angelo. To learn more, visit our website at international.
As part of your organization, Dan, you are essentially targeting 10 or so states for legalizing recreational marijuana: Rhode Island, Vermont, New Hampshire, Hawaii. What's your sense of why those states could be ripe for legalization?
Well, the states that you mentioned are most likely to do this legislatively. They don't have a ballot initiative process there like we do in Colorado and Washington, where ballot initiatives were recently passed, and like we do in Maine, California, Arizona, Nevada, and some other states where we expect in 2016 or maybe even sooner, initiatives will pass to tax and regulate marijuana.
And Reed, is it a sense that this could end up being another sort of coastal middle America divide, or red state, blue state divide?
Well, aside from a few states like Nevada and Arizona that you just mentioned, every other state in that list has one thing in common: they have Democratic legislatures. And in those states, you know, one of the big stories that we're telling at GovBeat is the divide between red America and blue America.
Yeah.
Red America is restricting abortion and cutting taxes on everything, whereas blue America is legalizing gay marriage and legalizing marijuana. So here we see, again, that sort of patchwork nation, as you mentioned, it's the coastal versus the inland.
I don't use marijuana, but as a teacher of 36 years, I can tell you lots of other people use it. I don't believe in prohibition. I don't think it works. Prohibiting it hasn't stopped anybody from getting a hold of it. I would like to see it regulated so that maybe kids can't get a hold of it so easily. I know they get a hold of it now very easily. I support a new approach to marijuana. I support legalizing it. It's with us. It's not going to go away. And if we can get money through the taxation, we can also educate our kids about it. That's why I support it.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And in the 420 headline news today, we gave you that study on marijuana lowering the risk of domestic violence. And this is something that comes to mind as the NFL is still reeling from, first, its two-game suspension of Ray Rice for knocking out his then-fiancée and dragging her by the hair through the hotel lobby. He got two games for that. But now we've got another football player whose name escapes me right at the moment, who's just been busted, just been arrested on felony domestic assault charges for allegedly punching his 10-week pregnant wife. Right. So now this is supposedly going to test the NFL's new policy, which is 6-game suspension for a first time domestic violence. Now, unfortunately for the NFL, this comes at the same time that Josh Gordon, the leading receiver in the NFL last year, who, by the way, led the league having only played 14 games because he had to sit out 2 games because of pot. Right. So in 14 games, he beat all the rest of the wide receivers in 16. He had his sentence, his punishment, upheld by an arbitrator. So he has to sit out the entire season. So here's a guy sitting out the entire season for weed, while the latest domestic abuser who allegedly hit his pregnant lady, wife, fiance, I'm not sure, he may get 6 games under the new suspension policy. This reminds me a little bit of when Barack Obama fixed, supposedly, or addressed the crack cocaine disparity. You know about this one? This is where if you have 5 grams of crack, you were eligible for the same sentencing, the same mandatory minimum as someone who has 500 grams of powder coke, cocaine. Now, chemically speaking and pharmacologically speaking, there's no difference, right? Crack cocaine, powder cocaine, both can get you addicted, both make you feel good. The difference, of course, is crack cocaine is sold in small amounts in the inner cities. Powder cocaine is more expensive and is used in the suburbs. It's a black and white issue. So as activists like me have been pointing out this 100-to-1 disparity, you can have 100 times more white cocaine than you can have black cocaine, right? Well, the Obama administration actually addressed this and got some laws passed and got some sentencing changed. So that now the discrepancy is only 18-to-1. It's not as racist as it used to be. And when you get progress like that, you have to go, thanks. You know, but it's still racist. It's 18-to-1 racist versus 100-to-1 racist, but it's still racist, right? So I'm glad the NFL increased the domestic violence policy up to 6 games for a first offense, but still 6 games for a first offense of hitting someone versus a season for hitting the joint too many times? That still seems wrong to most people. And we just reported on that NFL players poll that found that 75% of the players believe that marijuana is safer than alcohol. And yet, they can drink. Well, I guess that Matt Prater, that kicker, got busted for his drinking. But that aside, we still have this disparity where you're getting this. The guy who beat his pregnant fiance may still play this season. Josh Gordon, who smoked weed, will not. So that leads me back to this study where these researchers looked over 600 couples to figure out whether the wife or the husband smoking pot predicted domestic abuse in the first 9 years of marriage. Let's see if they smoke pot, if it makes them violent. So what they found, and this is quote, "We found that more frequent marijuana use by husbands and wives predicted less frequent intimate partner violence perpetration by husbands. If a husband smokes more, the husband commits less domestic violence. If the wife smokes more, the husband commits less domestic violence." Continuing, "Husbands' marijuana use also predicted less frequent intimate partner violence perpetration by wives." So if the husband smokes pot, the wife is less violent. And then it concludes with moderation analyses demonstrated that couples in which both spouses used marijuana frequently reported the least frequent IPV, intimate partner violence perpetration. Couples in which both spouses used marijuana frequently had the least amount of domestic violence. Now, they did note that there was an association between wives who smoked pot and their propensity for violence. But it only existed for women who had already had a past history of violence. Now, on the other hand, when we take a look at alcohol, which is promoted and advertised in every sporting event in the NFL like crazy, at the stadiums, sold at the stadiums, we find that on any alcohol use days, heavy alcohol use days, and as the number of drinks increased on a given day, the odds of physical and sexual aggression perpetration increased. The odds of psychological aggression increased on heavy alcohol use days only. Marijuana does not increase the odds of any type of aggression, according to the researchers.
Hey, everybody, we're all gonna get laid.
Well, thanks, Rodney. Wouldn't that be swell? All right, that's 20 after. It means it's 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone, where our own Priscilla Seibin has returned back to school, folks. She was a summer intern. She's gone, so we will see her again sometime, I'm sure, when there's an event or something to report on. Stay tuned. Drug War Data Mining is next on opiate overdose rates in medical marijuana states. 420 Radio. Tune in, turn on, get high, Lee educated.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
Weeducated Talk Radio with Ruby Lexington, Nikki Fox, Steve the Caregiver, and Jeff Kaufman from Arizona. Replaying Mondays at 10 Pacific on 420radio.org.
Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net.
Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
Welcome back, everyone. 22 after the hour. And when it comes to drug war data mining, there's one name you need to know. And if you haven't read his work and followed up with him at normal.org, you are doing yourself a disservice as a marijuana activist. That's Paul Armentano, the deputy director of Normal, who is a senior policy analyst at Normal and has written more on marijuana studies, science, and polling than probably anybody else on the planet. His latest piece is up on hightimes.com, and it's entitled Legal Marijuana States Possess Lower Rates of Opiate Overdoses, Opiate ODs. Now, this is a serious problem that we've got in America today. In 1999, there were fewer than 4,100 opiate overdoses, you know, opiate OD deaths in America in 1999. By 2010, that was up to 16,600. That's a 4 times increase in the span of a decade in opiate overdoses. We can point to all the reasons why. We can point to how drug testing pushes people toward harder drugs. And we can point to how people get hooked on OxyContin and Vicodin and Percocet and all of these synthetic opioids, that the production of which has gone up 1,600% since the 1990s. 16 times the amount of production. With the express explanation that the reason why the production has gone up so much is so that after all of the illegitimate parties get theirs, the legitimate patients will still have enough to get theirs, you see. That's why they're producing so much OxyContin and Percocet and Vicodin. It's to make sure that everybody who wants to get hooked on the opioids get hooked on it. And we're supposed to be surprised by there being a 4 times increase in the number of opiate overdoses. Well, a team of investigators out there at University of Pennsylvania in New York City
Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York City, and then Johns Hopkins in Baltimore analyzed opiate overdose death rates from 1999 to 2010. And of course, from 1999 to 2010, you've got 13 states that have passed medical marijuana laws. And this is what they report. Quote, states with medical cannabis laws had a 24.8% lower mean annual opioid overdose mortality rate compared with states without medical cannabis laws. Folks, that's 25% lower per year when a state adopts medical marijuana. Specifically, overdose deaths from opioids decreased by an average of 20% 1 year after the law, 25% after 2 years, and up to 33% by years 5 and 6. One out of five people who dies from an opiate overdose could be saved in the first year of a medical cannabis law. One out of four people who die of an opiate overdose could be saved within 2 years. One out of three people who die could be saved by the 5th and 6th year. They concluded, quote, In an analysis of death certificate data from 1999 to 2010, we found that states with medical cannabis laws had lower mean opioid analgesic overdose mortality rates compared with states without such laws. This finding persisted when excluding intentional overdose deaths, suicide, suggesting that medical cannabis laws are associated with lower opioid analgesic overdose mortality among individuals using opioid analgesics for medical indications. Similarly, the association between medical cannabis laws and lower opioid analgesic overdose mortality rates persisted when including all deaths related to heroin, even if no opioid analgesic was present, indicating that lower rates of opioid analgesic overdose mortality were not offset by higher rates of heroin overdose mortality. Although the exact mechanism is unclear, our results suggest a link between medical cannabis laws and lower opioid analgesic overdose mortality. By the way, when they say opioid analgesic overdose mortality, they are talking about overdosing on pills, Percocet, Vicodin, OxyContin, those kind of pills. Less overdose from those pills because when you're using medical cannabis, you don't need as much of those pills. You can get by with less of them. We have seen this in the Berkeley Patients Group study.
'420 Radio, the world's voice of marijuana legalization. The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com.
Handle the truth. The
entirely legitimate topic for debate.
You have offended my family.
Hey, this is great, man.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
I know nothing.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
We don't need no stinking budget.
Homosexuality.
How in the century you have blurred the meaning of the words we
the people.
Be warned, this is not your mother's marijuana.
You could ask yourself a question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I want to ask you a bunch of questions. I want to have them answered immediately.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everybody. Half past the hour, and as I've mentioned, I've just returned from Astoria, Oregon, which is in beautiful Clatsop County, the very northwestern tip of Oregon, and it's also known by many as the home of the Goonies. If you're into the Goonies movie, that's where it was filmed, as well as Kindergarten Cop and a whole bunch of other films. Had some guests up there as part of our Maria activism gathering, marijuana activist retreat in Astoria, and it was just a beautiful time for a couple of Texans and a couple of Georgians to come up and experience the beauty of Oregon. But while we were there, we were in the home county of Clatsop County District Attorney Josh Marquis. Now, you gotta have some sympathy for the guy. I mean, he's a decent guy, and apparently he's been a good district attorney for Clatsop County, but unfortunately for him, he has emerged as the leading voice for law enforcement as their opposition against Measure 91. That's the initiative here in Oregon to legalize marijuana. Now, that's a tough position to be in when this state is generally expected to pass legalization, and 1 in 9 adult Oregonians smoke marijuana monthly. Now, since legalization is such a popular idea, it's up to Josh Marquis to sow the seeds of doubt, confusion, and fear so voters will stick with the status quo of prohibition. But sadly, he's so blinded by his mission that he's abandoned a principle that a law enforcement official should always abide by: the truth. In his latest rant against Measure 91, he says that it contains an Easter egg that nobody is talking about. Now, for you older listeners out there, an Easter egg is a term that's used in gaming and computer programming, and it refers to a secret feature, a secret room, or a secret, you know, weapon or something that can be unlocked through some sort of secret code or pattern or whatever. An Easter egg, something you weren't expecting, a surprise that's hidden from the user. So he's saying that Measure 91 contains this Easter egg, and on his personal Facebook page, Marquis writes, quote, "One Easter egg not mentioned is that Measure 91 takes away any criminal penalties for smuggling any amount of weed into a jail or youth prison," end quote. Wow! Legalizing marijuana under Measure 91 means you can smuggle a pound of weed into prison with impunity? Why would legalizers put such a devastatingly awful provision in an initiative? What good would anyone ascribe to allowing prisoners mass quantities of weed? Fewer fights? Yeah, probably. Better appreciation of the chow, perhaps. Totally awesome rounds of hacky sack in the yard? Well, look, folks, what Marquis is referring to is Section 55 in Measure 91. Let me read to you Section 55. "Possession of marijuana in correctional facility prohibited. It is unlawful for any person to possess or engage in the use of marijuana items in a correctional facility or in a youth correctional facility. A violation of this subsection is a Class B violation." Well, if you read that, it sure looks like he's right. A mere ticket for possessing or using marijuana in a prison is exactly what Section 55 of Measure 91 proposes. Except for one little detail. Measure 91 doesn't repeal any existing laws regarding contraband in prisons. Specifically, Oregon revised statute 162.185, which reads, quote, "Supplying contraband. A person commits the crime of supplying contraband if the person knowingly introduces any contraband into a correctional facility, youth correction facility, or state hospital, or being confined in a correctional facility, youth correction facility, or state hospital, the person knowingly makes, obtains, or possesses any contraband. Supplying contraband is a Class C felony." And furthermore, a 1978 Oregon Supreme Court decision, which was State v. Meyer, found that information alleging that a jail inmate possessed marijuana was sufficient to charge that inmate with a violation of ORS 162.185. Marquis writes that, quote, Measure 91 takes away, end quote, criminal penalties for jail smuggling. But in order to do that, Measure 91 would have to directly repeal ORS 162.185 or indicate that it supersedes all state marijuana laws. It does not. Now, Measure 91 does have a supersede feature in it. Section 58 states, Section 3 to Section 70 of this act, designed to operate uniformly throughout the state, shall be paramount and superior to, and shall fully replace and supersede any and all municipal charter enactments or local ordinances inconsistent with it. Such charters and ordinances hereby are repealed. So state law 162.185 will still be intact, and prisoners caught with marijuana and guards or visitors or jail workers knowingly smuggling marijuana to them will still face Class C felonies. What Measure 91, Section 55 is covering is a guard, visitor, or jail worker who unknowingly has their own personal legal marijuana in an amount less than an ounce on the prison property. So they can't turn around and say, oh, well, Measure 91, you know, it's legal for me to have this ounce in my pocket as long as I'm not smuggling it to prisoners. So in other words, Section 55 is a ticket in addition to the Class C felony you get for smuggling weed into prison. Now, I'm just a high school graduate. I don't have a law degree, and I figured this out. You'd think a sitting district attorney could see this if he wanted to, but that's not his game. His game here is to confuse and frighten people and to say, oh, Measure 91 makes it legal to smuggle weed into prison. And then when someone goes, looks up Measure 91, Section 55, they go, oh my God, it does. It says that you can, if you bring it into prison, it's just a ticket. And he knows damn well that people aren't going to stop and think, well, wait a minute. Is there already a law against smuggling weed into prison? And this isn't repealing that law? People don't think that deep on this stuff. That's why I'm here, to dig deep into this stuff and to tell you that Josh Marquis is lying to you, lying by omission, purposefully trying to confuse the issue around Section 55. But that's not the only place where he's trying to sow the seeds of doubt. He's got this another part. This is also on his personal Facebook page, where he claims that Measure 91 legalizing marijuana won't provide any tax revenues to local law enforcement. Here it is, quote, Section 44 is a spaghetti-like maze of divvying up what is likely to be very little net revenue. In order to compete with the black market, Measure 91 keeps taxes much lower than Washington or Colorado, $35 an ounce for bud. Yeah, that's true. That's true about the taxes. We are going to keep the taxes down to $35 an ounce. But this very little net revenue seems specious to me, because various estimates from economists far smarter than I peg the revenues between $30 million and $105 million. Now, maybe that's very little net revenue to Sir Richard Branson. Or maybe Warren Buffett think that's very little net revenue. To me, numbers with two commas in them are a lot of revenue. 30 to 150, 105 million. Now, the state itself estimates 17 to 40 million. That's the state estimating legalization will bring in 17 to 40 million. But here's what Josh Marquis, the district attorney in Clatsop County, has to say on his personal Facebook page, quote, so if the state collects 20 million, first you have to deduct the costs of regulation, like with booze. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. You know, we could gross a lot of tax revenue, but then the cost of regulating it, well, you know, we could spend all the money there, right? That's his theory, right? But he never actually throws any numbers at you, does he? Well, I will. According to the state's own analysis, The startup costs are estimated to be $300,000 in fiscal year 2015, $2.5 million in fiscal year 2016, and $1 million in fiscal year 2017, totaling almost $3.8 million over 3 years. Costs of regulation at the Oregon Liquor Control Commission are estimated to be $3.2 million per year, or $9.6 million over 3 years. So, if we go back to Josh Marquis's, if the state collects $20 million a year, well, $20 million a year, that's $60 million over 3 years, minus the $3.8 million in startup costs and the $9.6 million in regulatory costs, and that's leaving us a net revenue of $46.6 million over three fiscal years, or about $15.5 million a year net, or what Josh Marquis calls, quote, very little net revenue, end quote. He continues, quote, then read section 44, paragraph 2, subparagraph B, section I, and you'll learn that getting revenue depends on how many stores a city has. Fewer stores, less money. And while 15% does go to the state police, the remaining amount for law enforcement is only to, quote, perform its duties under this act, end quote. Well, yeah, that's true. 10% goes to the cities and 10% goes to the counties, in proportion to the number of marijuana licensees operating in the city or county. Look, if your city or county bans marijuana licenses, then it neither needs the revenue to regulate marijuana nor deserves the benefits of regulated marijuana. He continues, quote, so, since almost no cops are tasked to enforce marijuana laws, and you can only use local cop money to enforce marijuana laws, in most towns, it will mean the local police get nothing. Well, yeah, if your town bans marijuana licenses, yes, it will get nothing. But where is this no cops are tasked to enforce marijuana laws coming from? Cops enforce marijuana laws at least 12,000 times a year in Oregon. Look, we'll talk a little bit more about this tax revenue and where it's going. And when we come back from break, we'll show you exactly how Josh Marquis is playing the shell game with you, trying to fool you into thinking that legalizing marijuana isn't actually going to raise any money. I've got more numbers, more statistics from the state itself when we come back from our break. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. You can find us on the TuneIn app on the go. Get TuneIn app for your smartphone and you can listen to 420 Radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We are the home of marijuana legalization talk radio. There's always something on 420 Radio. We're back with the continuation of this rant after this.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
This is crack, rock cocaine. It isn't glamorous or cool or kid stuff. It's the most addictive kind of cocaine, and it can kill you. What's really bad is nobody knows how much it takes. So every time you use it, you risk dying. It isn't worth it. Look, everybody wants to be cool. But doing it with crack isn't just wrong. It could be dead wrong.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org.
New Approach Oregon is a coalition of Oregon citizens who believe that treating marijuana use as a crime has failed, costing taxpayers millions in law enforcement resources. Our approach will regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana for adults in Oregon. We can move Oregon forward and create new revenue for critical services. Visit our website at newapproachoregon.com or our page on Facebook at New Approach Oregon. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone. 46 after the hour, and we continue our look at the desperate lies of Oregon anti-legalization district attorney Josh Marquis. And when we last left you, we were talking about his contention that no cops, almost no cops, are tasked to enforce marijuana laws, and local police will get nothing from Measure 91 legalization. And I have to ask, where's this no cops are tasked to enforce marijuana laws coming from? This is where Josh Marquis loves to do this, and the rest of these No on 91 people, they like to say, well, look, in Oregon, it's decriminalized. You'd have to have over an ounce on you. You'd pretty much have to smoke a joint and blow it in a cop's face before he'd bust you. So what's the point? Why should we change anything? Why not just leave it decriminalized? Well, there's a very good reason for it. And all you have to do to understand this is just change the name of the prohibited item. And just about anyone can understand what those of us who smoke marijuana feel. Instead of us talking about having decriminalized marijuana, think about it if Bibles were decriminalized. Oh, we don't have a problem with you if you want to, you know, worship and read your Bible in your home. That's okay. If you want to, you know, some 50-year-old guy wants to get home after a long day of work and read his Bible, you know, at home where he's not bothering anyone. You know, as long as he's not driving my kid or, you know, flying an airplane, you know, but, you know, reading that Bible, that's fine. Yeah, you can do that at home. That's fine. But, you know, there's nowhere, he's not allowed to buy a Bible anywhere. You can't buy Bibles. We can't have any Bible stores that sell Bibles. And if we catch you, you know, if a cop catches you displaying a Bible openly, if the public could see you reading your Bible, why, we'd have to give you a ticket. We'd have to ticket you. But it's just a ticket. I mean, it's not like cops are going to send you to jail. You'd have to have more than 28 Bibles on you before you'd actually go to jail for it. I mean, I know this sounds ridiculous as I say it. Even as I say it, it's hard to form the sentences because it sounds so ridiculous and offensive, doesn't it? Now, I can hear some of the counterarguments would be, well, Russ, religion and smoking pot's not the same thing. How come? Why? Why are they not the same thing? Explain that to you. Well, you know, religion, we have constitutionally protected right to religion, but smoking pot's something you choose to do. But yeah, but religion's something you choose to do. Yeah, but religions have, you know, have heroes and religions have worship and religions have songs and religions have traditions and ceremonies. And yeah, sounds like most of the pot smokers I know. Hell, we even got the funny hats. So I've never understood why we don't attack this as a civil rights issue. I've heard people, you don't have a civil right to smoke pot. The hell, I don't have a civil right to smoke pot. If a woman's got a civil right to choose what she does with her uterus, I sure as hell have the civil right to choose what I do with my brain and lungs. Or is that too politically incorrect of me to say so? Hell yeah, we've got a civil right to smoke pot. It's in the Ninth Amendment. Just the fact, because they didn't write all the rights down doesn't mean that you don't have them. So, yeah, this is where Josh Marquis and these guys like to get off with the, well, it's only a ticket. You know, Oregon's already decriminalizing. By gosh, medical marijuana, you can have a pound and a half. What's the problem with it? The problem is that you are patronizing and condescending to adults, presuming to take upon yourself the right to be able to determine in which way they pursue their leisure activities. That's what's wrong with this. So, they like to say, oh, people, well, these cops are, no cops are tasked to enforce marijuana laws. Well, sure they are, Josh. 12,000 times. Now, the Measure 91 campaign got hammered on this because they said there was 12,000 arrests a year, and that's not true. There's about 12,000 arrests and tickets in Oregon for marijuana. 12,000 arrests and tickets. There's about 2,400 arrests a year. Average is about 200 a month. A little less, a little more, depending on the month. And yeah, those do have to be possession amounts that are greater than an ounce. And yeah, they do have to be people that are growing marijuana or possibly selling marijuana. And that's exactly what we're trying to end by legalizing marijuana. So it's absolutely apropos to refer to those 2,400 arrests and the other 10,000 so tickets that happen. Because even if it's a cop just having to stop someone an extra 5, 10, 20 minutes to write the ticket, that's police time not being used on serious crime. So yes, it does add up, and yes, it does matter. But Josh Marquis likes to say, well, these cities and these counties, if they have pot licensees, they'll be able to get money. And that's true. They don't get tax money if they don't have pot shops. But they could only use that money for duties related to the act. As if that wouldn't be significant. I mean, some of the things that cops could spend their marijuana tax money on could include, underage entrance to pot shops. They could do stings to make sure that nobody's selling to kids. They could respond to smell complaints about grow sites or people growing at home. They could have investigations of illegal and unlicensed grows. They could do search warrants against illegal BHO manufacture at home and so on. Josh Marquis wants you to think this isn't about a lot of money, but with 15% of the assumed $15.5 million net, remember, Josh Marquis said if the state made $20 million, they'd still have to pay for regulation and all that. We figured that out. That worked out to about $4.5 million a year. So with the remaining $15.5 million of tax revenue that goes to the state police, 15% of that goes to the state police, that's $2.3 million a year to the state police. $2.3 million a year for our state cops. For the local cops, their 10% is $1.5 million a year, $1.5 million for the county sheriffs, and $1.5 million a year for the local police. If you do the math on that, there are 36 counties in Oregon, so the mean amount available will be $43,000 per year per county. $43,000 per year per county. Now, greater amounts for more populous counties that have lots of marijuana licenses, and lesser amounts for smaller counties. So sure, yeah, Multnomah County, Portland, Oregon, probably going to get $500,000 maybe. Who knows? And, you know, tiny-ass Malheur County that might not have any licenses, tiny in population, not in size, might only get $1,000. Who knows? It's going to be based on how many marijuana licenses they have and their population. And of course, if one of these counties does vote to ban marijuana licenses, then the 10% only has to be divided among 35 counties. The more counties that ban the licenses, the better all the other counties that have licenses will do. So sure, go ahead, Washington County, be all conservative and ban marijuana businesses, because that just means more money for Multnomah County next door. You can do similar math with the number of cities. There's 242 incorporated cities in Oregon, so the mean amount available per city would be $6,400 a year. More for big cities with lots of licenses, less for small towns. And again, if any city bans a license, bans licensees, that just means more money in the pot for all the other cities. So even with Josh Marquis' assumption of $20 million a year in marijuana revenues, an average Oregon county could make $43,000 a year, and an average Oregon city could make $6,400 a year. If we go with the state estimate said it could be up to $40 million a year, so we could double that. Or, as Josh Marquis puts it, if we tax and regulate marijuana and give 35% of the proceeds to law enforcement, quote, police get nothing, end quote. And of course, another bit of desperate lie from Josh Marquis is stoned mayhem on the freeways, folks. SMOF. That's right. Josh Marquis's got SMOF rearing its ugly head. It's the go-to scare tactic. SMOF and WOTC. What about the children? So Clatsop County DA Josh Marquis recently said this on his personal Facebook page. Quote, as a DA, I see too much damage done by drugs and alcohol, particularly mixed with driving. In Clatsop County, there are only two trained drug recognition expert cops and no real test that scientifically shows impairment by pot. Many commenters claim it makes them a better driver. End quote. Now, see, the problem for Josh Marquis' scaremongering lies in Oregon's traffic statistics and the results of legalization in Colorado and Washington. The fact is, Oregon's roads have never been safer, and crashes and fatalities in Colorado and Washington are lower than the national average and not increasing due to the legalization there. Let's start with Oregon. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration tracks the number of fatalities in auto crashes in every state. In the 5 years prior to the passage of the Oregon Medical Marijuana Act, there was an average of 531 traffic deaths per year, with four of the 5 years above 500. In 1999, the year the act went into effect, there were 414 fatalities, and the average over the next 5 years was 460. 2003 was the only year where there were more than 500 fatalities since medical marijuana has existed in Oregon. Now, that doesn't mean that marijuana made traffic safer. Although, you could argue that people substituting marijuana for alcohol are certainly safer drivers. Marijuana is among the lowest risk factors for accident. One recent meta-analysis showed almost double the risk of car crash for a fatal car crash for a marijuana driver versus a 3 to 5 times the risk from users of certain prescription drugs and 13 times the risk from an alcohol user. Another analysis showed the risk of dying as a marijuana-using driver about equal to a penicillin-using or antihistamine-using driver. Even the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration says, quote, there is little, if any, evidence to indicate that drivers who have used marijuana alone are any more likely to cause serious accidents than drug-free drivers, end quote. But the data don't show that marijuana is making traffic any more dangerous either. The post-medical marijuana peak in fatalities was 512 in 2003. The next highest number was 487 fatalities in 2005. That happens to be the year that we increased our medical marijuana possession and cultivation limits. Since then, there has been a steady decline in road fatalities. In 2009 is when we saw our first dispensaries appear here in Oregon. That's also the first year fatalities fell below 400. And for the past 3 years of data, we have fewer than 340 traffic deaths per year. Now, secondly, Colorado and Washington. These two states already have traffic fatality rates far below the national average. The Washington State Patrol data shows one fewer fatality from 2012 to 2013. In their Drive Sober, Get Pulled Over DUI patrols that they run between the beginning of Hempfest to the Labor Day weekend, they got 78 fewer drivers than the year before. Total DUI arrests dropped. And Bob Calkins of the Washington State Patrol says, quote, we are not seeing a change in the declining fatality trend since the legalization of marijuana. And if you look at Washington's 100 million miles driven, if you take the fatalities per 100 million miles, Washington's at 0.77. That's almost a quarter less than Oregon's 1.01. And they've got legal weed. We'll continue the discussion of the obfuscations of Josh Marquis when we come back with hour two. But that's all the time we got for hour one. Thanks for joining us. We'll also have some photos from Maria 2014 But until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you